There you go, there's a beep.
Good evening, everyone. Many of you don't know me. My name is Yann Roberge. I'm the chair of the political science department on the Glendon campus of York University. I'm also a core faculty with the York University European Union Center of Excellence. This is part, Shireen, is this officially part of the MPPAL speaking series?
Yes, we will count it.
You will count it as part of the MPPAL speaking series. It is also part of the EUCE Law and Governance public speaking series. So thank you very much for coming here on a Monday evening. Thank you very much for fighting traffic through the TTC and all other means. I much appreciate it, and I think we are in for a really good and a really interesting presentation. I do want to present Professor Danita Sipicu, who's at University of Roma Tor Vergata. My Italian's not getting better. Danita, and I'm going to, she's going to hate this presentation, but I'm going to be as glorious as I can. Danita has worked for the OECD. She's had many contracts for research with the Italian government and other international organizations. She's been at University of Roma Tor Vergata for a few years now. She's published across the board, both in Italian and in English and international journal. She is currently the visiting professor for the EUCE here over for a few weeks. And as part of her commitment for coming to Toronto for 3.5 weeks, she has gladly accepted to give us this lecture. A Grand New Continent, Gains and Gaps of Public Management Reforms in the EU. And what I've asked Danita to do is to speak for about 30 to 45 minutes, depending on how things go. She's hoping to generate questions, discussions, feedback. You can challenge her all you want. And then we'll go on from there. So Danita, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So hello everybody, I had the chance to speak with most of you, almost everybody, and yes, we will talk about public management reforms in the European Union. And as you can see, the title is very broad, but we will just pick a couple of issues, and you will find something more in the references, and I'll be here until early July, so if you want to talk to me about other issues, I'll be available at Glendon to discuss about these issues. The size is small, so you can interrupt me anytime to make your reflections or to say something. So let's start from here. As you may know, the European Union is a different level compared to the national public administrations, and there is an integration process going on for some time in Europe. I'm not going to discuss if the integration process is a success or a failure. Everybody has a different position based on the policy sector, on particular episodes, and so on. What I would like to do today, because I'm a public management scholar, is to try to explore the public management perspective, if that perspective can help us understand something more about the integration process. And of course, to understand something more about the European integration process, but also more in general about policy coordination in other settings. So something that you can also use in your job. Now, which is the biggest problem of the European Union? Don't say Berlusconi. One of the biggest problems is the so-called compliance or non-compliance problem. You have heard about it. And even in the newspapers, you read continuously about the non-compliance problem, which is not only a legal problem, that the European law is not correctly transposed into national law, but it's more a political and economical and a managerial problem. the immigrants coming from Africa, from the war in Libya and so on, that were bounced from Italy to France, are an integration failure. And the foreign policy, the nuclear energy, a lot of choices you can think about have compliance problems that may not yet be legal compliance problems, but they are compliance and implementation problems. Who is supposed to implement the European Union policies? Who owns the Lisbon agenda? Who is responsible for achieving those very beautiful aims of the Lisbon agenda? Of course, I say beautiful in an ironic sense, but they're very vague. So who is responsible for implementing the policies, for achieving on the ground the integration?
Public services.
Public services, which are national. I mean, the European Union, the acquis communautaire, does not include the public administrations. We don't have a European administrative law. In Italy we have administrative law. In Germany there is the administrative or public law. At the European level we don't have this integration. So the integration stops when we talk about public administrations. What we have at this level is informal cooperation and networking. There is the network of directors general of public administration, there is the ministerial network of the ministers of member states that are responsible for the public sector and for public administrations. And these all meet and they take decisions and approve resolutions, but these resolutions are not binding. So the starting point is that there's an N missing there, I don't know what has happened. But the point is that the national civil services are not part of the acquis communautaire. Actually, this is partially correct, because the new countries are being asked to achieve some aims which have to do with the quality and effectiveness of the public administration. The older member countries were not required to achieve these standards. But as a principle, this is not a sector that is regulated. And of course, from this situation, there are a lot of issues on which we can debate. Of course, the compliance problem poses a lot of has a lot of consequences in terms of trust between countries, between member states, in terms of weakening the European Union in presence of globalization trends. And as you may know, there are reform trends, there are reform programs going on at both levels. So there is a reform process of the European Union, how the European Union manages itself, and there is a managerial reform of the single countries, the single countries. Have you heard about the new public management? Now in Europe, we are more used to talk about the public governance approach to reforms, not the new public management. But these are trends taking place at the national level. Both are important, of course, and there is influence, there is interaction between these levels. If you think about quality of regulation, quality of regulation is a process, a modernization process that had started at the European Union level. You know the standard cost model? These are kind of approach that measure the costs and benefits of new regulations. Like how much days needs a business to accomplish something, or how much, of course, work days you can translate into money. And you can say how expensive that regulation is. And you can pose simplification targets in order to make it less burden, some for the business. This is a trend that has departed at the European level with targets of reducing this burden of 25% in the next 10 years, and the countries are doing the same thing following the European level. And of course there is the reverse. countries are modernizing their national public administrations, and they pretend the European Union to have the same efficiency and effectiveness levels. So this is the general framework. We are not going to talk about the European management reform, but we are going to talk about how we can improve the national public administrations to solve the compliance system, the compliance problem. Of course, the European Union effectiveness of every policy or decision depends on the national public administrations. We will go and see a couple of explanations to the compliance problem, and then we will enter into the merit of the national public administrations and see if there is a Europeanization trend or not. What do you think about the compliance problem? Which are the reasons behind it? To implement, and there is no capacity. See, the data are impressive. These are the more recent, of course, 2004, but in 144 out of 155 cases, this is a research study done by the EIPA, which is European Institute of Public Administration. I mean, in most of the cases, member states cannot fully apply or correctly apply a European Union decision.
So, excuse my mind, but who is the one who sets these standards? Which body, which group?
There are different bodies at the European Union level. It depends on the sector. On agriculture, you have somebody responsible. And of course, are the countries themselves that are represented there?
That was my next question.
Yes, are the countries themselves. And in case of non-compliance, there is the European Court of Justice, and there are the infringement cases. And the penalties you have to pay or in order to comply. So your question is very good because it takes the political reasons behind. So is the democratic, if you want, side of the problem. If the countries themselves have taken the decision, why should they not implement? And of course, this is part of the problem, because the implementation is not depending only on the central level. If you think about the European countries, you have regional governments, provincial governments, local governments, then you have single units like healthcare agencies, schools, universities. And each of these units has autonomy because they have undergone all the new public management reforms. So it's not only the central government that is responsible for implementation. And I mean, the central government has taken the decision inside the European Union. But then the single unit, administrative unit, has to implement. So we had an administrative capacity reason behind non-compliance, a political reason that may be behind. What else?
Cultural and economic. Language barriers.
Okay, so these regulations may be complicated. Actually, the European Union spends a lot on translations and it's a big budget voice, but this may be, I mean, this regulations may be too complicated, so also a legal aspect. Actually, there are two main legal forms the European Union takes its decisions. One is regulations and the other is directives. Regulations are very specific, so the countries know exactly what they have to do to fulfill the regulations. And then there are the directives, which are very vague. They need to accommodate all countries, and then each country need to interpret it. The directive, and the parliament needs to approve it in order to be implemented. And this is another issue we will go through. Yeah, these are some data on the number of infringements in front of the Court of Justice. What comes out from this table is that almost 60% of the infringement cases come from the older countries of the European Union. You see France, Italy, and you have Greece, of course, and you have Portugal, and these countries more or less, also Germany has 8%. It's interesting to see that the Eurosceptical countries have less infringements. And those that are more communautaire have more infringements. Of course, non-compliance has a lot of problems. First of all, it may be contagious and addictive, and may undermine any integration effort that the European Union attempts to achieve. Now, if you go and search the literature about the compliance problem, you will find a lot of both legal and political studies. The legal studies, for instance, say what you said, that these regulations are complicated to understand. For instance, some of the members, we will get some data also, are unaware of the obligations. They simply don't know they have to comply with something. Or unwilling, and this is the political issue. And the solutions that have been put forward have been, of course, of two kinds. To change the legal instruments, let's leave aside the directives that are very vague and need some interpretation. Also in countries like Italy, that has a low political stability, and the parliament changes and changes and changes, this means that directives never get approved at all. So let's take the regulations, which are directly applicable and are very concrete and very detailed. This is the first solution. And the second one is, this is more political. So if the countries are unwilling, this is a very irrational approach. Let's provide some incentive to be compliant. So raise the cost of non-compliance or the benefits of complying with the directives. And the management questions have been unasked and unanswered. All the administrative capacity issue has not been tackled as much as it should be. Yeah, let's go inside very briefly inside of these two solutions. The first one, let's change the legal instruments, take the regulations, because 80% of infringement proceedings concern directives. But the problem is that not every country has problems with directives as compared to regulations. Some countries have high compliance levels, so the problem is not the legal instrument. There is also a lot of difference between the sectors. In some sectors...
Sorry, I have a question. What's the difference between the directives and the regulations?
The regulations are very are immediately applicable and are very detailed. Okay. You don't need to interpret them anyway. The directives are... They just give a direction. We should go towards a greater integration of careers in the university system of our country. But they don't say how, okay, give more space to countries to
interpret. Like you use the word infringement proceedings.
Yes.
Could you give an example of a infringement proceeding?
Well, the biggest example, I mean the most renowned, is in the agriculture policy. You know, all the quota, you call it in Italy, quota latte, they are the maximum amounts of milk to be produced. The common agricultural policy set this maximum amount. Italy did not comply with this, and is still not complying. We are talking about 15 years of debate on this. It's not something recent, it's something going on. And what happens is that there is a fine, there is an infringement procedure in front of the Court of Justice, European Court of Justice, and then there is a fine to be paid by the country that does not comply. And Also, Greece had something very which attracted the public opinion a lot, and it was paid, the fine was paid on daily basis until you comply with the regulation.
Did Greece ever pay it back?
They've asked for it to be written down among the other debts. So there are two problems with this solution. The first one is that it is not true. It is not true in some countries that directives are more difficult to apply, and it's not true in some sectors, in some policy sectors. And the second is more of a philosophical issue. Do we really want to have the same identical solution in every country? Think about agriculture policy, education, transportation,
competition. It's almost like a European Union is almost like a federation, but yeah, very loosely connected federation of states, so you can't really have the same solutions.
And the countries are very different.
Yeah.
If you compare, I don't know, Estonia with Italy, not only size, of course, there are different cultural issues which are very important. So probably this high homogeneity is not even desirable. So this is the first solution. The second one, the more political one, is that indeed the penalties are very small. And it takes too long, like 10 years. So if you make some calculations, I've put a reference that makes these kind of calculations. At the end, you don't pay too much. You pay something like 300 of million of euros after 10 years of infringement procedure, which is not too much for Italy or Germany or France. So probably there is no incentive to be compliant. But this solution also has a problem. Would it be good to approach the non-compliance problem in this conflictual way? So to increase, to enforce punishment and so on. I mean, it's still a voluntary network. So people, relations are based on trust, on cooperation. If you put this conflictual problem, there may be a climate of conflict, and there is also a problem that politicians at the central level, when they have to comply with the European Union, what they say to their electors is, this is not my choice, I don't agree, it's unpopular, but the European Union made me do this. And the public opinion grows very hostile. And at the end, the European Union is not about integrating politicians, it's about integrating the people. So this is also a solution that may create problems. So what I'm trying to say here is not that the legal and the political issues are not important. They are important and they have been researched and studied a lot. The administrative capacity, which is not only how able you are to implement the regulation, but also how able you are to give your own input to what decision is being adopted. So it's not only a top-down view, it's also a bottom-up. A mayor, how much is able to give his own opinion and to make his voice heard at the European Union level. At the moment, this is not something that is happening, but it may be important in order for then the decisions and regulations and directives to be implemented in an effective way. So all the administrative capacity issue and the administrative culture, of course, that is behind administrative capacity has not been sufficiently explored. And there is a study, one of the few that tackle these issues, that calls this the Mediterranean syndrome. And what is called Laporte, I think. What he identifies is absence of a civic culture in those countries that do not implement very well the European Union decisions, or administrative structures and traditions that don't work well, like highly fragmented systems, administrative systems. And of course, also the legislative process, because inside the European Union, you have both the common law countries like the UK, but you have these heavily regulated countries like France and Italy and Spain and Germany. So you have to put these countries together. And it's not only behavior, it's also laws and legislative procedures, which are very important. In the UK, you can create and delete an organization with a single procedure. In Italy, we still have public institutions that are supposed to give help to the orphans of the Second World War. And nobody is able to cancel this institution, which have no reason to exist, but they exist. So these are countries which are very different. And of course, for these countries, the legislative process is also important. So how do we manage compliance? How do we enforce the administrative capacity of national civil services? How can we do this? Can the public management approach, which is more cooperative oriented, based on capacity building, can it provide a contribution to compliance problem? And how, of course, because the first question is easy. It's the second that it's really difficult. How?
It might be a little difficult if there's differences in the development of public management in each country, and also in the work ethic and the attitudes and everything. I don't want to be controversial, but I have a friend who lives in Greece. She's married to a Greek guy. And one of the things she always tells me is that Greek people are so lazy.
Yeah, in the public sector, especially the public sector in Greece, has rules that will be considered unacceptable in the UK. Okay, like but retiring at 55 years.
Like that, they don't pay taxes, that's their mantra. It's never to pay taxes, because government is evil.
So how do you, what do you propose? I mean, you are completely right. These countries are very different in the culture, in the history, and of course we cannot change the values, the culture, the history. These are things that you need 100 years to change 100 years of history. So probably a couple of centuries after, these countries will be more close to each other. I mean, that's the aim of the European Union, but at the moment they are very different.
So they can like have that more dialogue and speak to each other, have common conferences, where they could share information and knowledge and best practices and standards.
And should this be part of the European Union competencies?
Yeah, they're like trying to start building a common public management.
Administration, yeah. At the European level. Yeah. Does everybody agree with her? What she said?
Well,
that's like the most basic approach. Let's have all one workshop and throw out the rules.
They do a lot of workshops between national. The workshops are not missing. I'm really.
But like,
I'm sure.
Do people pick up anything from those, you know, like you said, the conferences and workshops?
Well, I can tell you one area that they're very strong in, and is in standardization, which is ISO, and ISO has been able to achieve a lot because it's like international, it's not just European. And so when it comes to things like technical barriers to trade and phytosanitary sanctions and things like that, the EU has been very successful with harmonizing those
things.
That's
true. That's true. The mobile phones are a success story. You pay a lot in Canada in mobile phones, and we pay really cute.
Yeah,
and this is a success. This is a success story. But of course, there are many failures examples as well that are important. So the point is, we have the European Union that of course has management problems and administrative capacity problems, but let's leave this a little bit aside. And then we have the national administrations that are supposed to implement this. And these are very different. how can we improve things? She said, we can create or begin thinking creating a European public administration. And this may be a solution. I mean, as long as it's competency, as long as the policy definition and the policy implementation is all competency of the European Union, there is no non-compliance at the national level.
But in that case, you probably will end up having a European Union government, right? But it's not supposed to be another level of government on top of the sovereign states. So I don't really know what is going on in terms of review and supervision of these regulations and directives. I'm kind of thinking maybe that's the direction.
That should be strengthened.
Yeah, instead of building up another layer of government. Mm-hmm.
Because that's just bureaucracy. Remember, we have government and then you have bureaucracy. So public management is really for the bureaucrats to implement commonly. But what she's saying is...
Actually,
that,
this has happened in the European Union with in relation to the monetary policy.
Yeah.
I mean, the euro is at the European level and there is no minister, national minister, responsible for the monetary policy. Yeah. This is the example that the case, the example when this has happened.
I was just gonna say, well, laws are made flexible. They have to, in a way that like they're still applicable to certain things, but they have to be open-ended just in case time change. Couldn't this have been the same thing for the EU to make policies a bit more flexible so they're more applicable to different states?
Exactly.
So I think that's one of the reasons that they have directives, because directives give you room
to
implement in a different ways.
Of course.
I want to just draw a point based on their discussion. My understanding is I think European EU law by itself is not hard law, right? It's in the category of soft law.
Directives are soft law, and the regulations are directly applicable, so are more comparable to hard law.
Yeah. Okay.
So are different instruments. Some are hard law and some are soft law. Of course, if you issue a lot of hard laws, you are going towards homogenization, mm-hmm. because the law is the same.
Okay.
Otherwise, you give room for adjustments, but you also give room for non-compliance. That's the point. There is, of course, a trade-off. Otherwise, it would have been very easy to decide on this.
Let's go a little bit ahead. Okay, so this is our philosophical discussion, and we will get back to this at the end of the lecture. Now, I just wanted to give you some data about what's happening in the national public administrations. This is just a very simple figure that has on this line government effectiveness. And here we have competitiveness, global competitiveness index. What you get to see from here is that the more effective the government, the more competitive the country. Okay, it's very simple. And inside the circle, you have the best performers. You find some European Union countries like Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, UK, Netherlands, Austria, and you also find the US and Canada. These are the top performers. Okay, what I want to show you now is what have been the reform trends.
What's happening to national public administrations? If you pick a European Union report, you will find that there have been decentralization and delegation, creation of executive agencies, privatization, and then for the new countries, building capacities for integration. And what this study says is that there are some common trends. The point is that you should go behind words. For instance, let's take agencification. Why do you create an executive agency? The new public management says that you created an executive agency to separate policy definition, takes place in the ministry or from policy implementation. And that's what has happened in Sweden. But why do you create agencies in Italy? Because ministries cannot hire, agencies can. So is this the same trend? Do we have smaller ministries? Do we have a real separation of policy definition, policy implementation?
No. So, in fact, these are different reform trends. We have the agencies, but they have nothing to do with each other. And so on.
If we go and see some data, this is the budget process. Does the budget process at the central level has a medium-term perspective? And you find some European countries here, Germany, Netherlands, Finland, and some others there, Norway, Italy, Portugal, Belgium. Okay, very spread around. The red line is the OECD average, just to give you a use of performance budgeting. Again, we have Finland, Netherlands, Norway here, and we have Belgium, Spain, Greece, Denmark on the other side.
Is that South Korea? Has to be South Korea.
Yeah, it has to be. It's OECD member countries, so it has to be South Korea. Human resources reforms. What has happened in terms of size to public employment from 1990 to 2001, so in 10 years? In some countries it has increased. Netherlands, Spain, Ireland. And in others it has significantly decreased. Finland, Germany, Sweden. Recruitment systems. Do you know this difference between career-based systems and position-based systems of the public employment? Career-based systems are those systems when you enter the public service as a fresh graduate and you leave the same public administration as a retired worker. So you make your whole career usually based on age and not on performance inside one administration. Of course, this is very extreme, but it gives you the sense of. Position-based means that every position is open to public or private sector employees. So it's more competition-based. And here you find the countries that have a position-based system, like Netherlands, United Kingdom. And in the other end, you have France. Of course, France has the ENA. You have to be part of the ENA, of the cadre of civil servants. You cannot just come out of a business and enter a ministry. Okay. In another country, you can. So this is the difference. Again, European countries are quite spread among different approaches. You find, I'm not going to go through this, but you find the relative strengths and weaknesses of the two systems in the slides. How much human resources management practices are delegated? Working hours, wage, when to take your holidays, when to do your training, this may be decided by a central government office for everybody in the civil service or from your top manager inside the organization. This gives the meaning of delegation. And we have Sweden, United Kingdom, Finland, Canada. In Canada there is pretty a good degree of delegation. And then we have countries like France, Italy, Ireland, that have centralization. And you can also have a sense of the trend. From 1995 to 2005, in these countries there has been devolution, delegation of this responsibility. Portugal, France, Hungary. In other countries, Canada as well, in other countries like Italy, Netherlands, Deutschland, so Germany, there has been the reverse trend, more centralization. Of course, centralizing these decisions, especially wage and hiring, means greater control on public expenditure. The biggest part of the public expenditure is on human resources, of course. So if you centralize, you can be sure that you don't go over certain limits. If you decentralize, you are sure that you are satisfying the needs of a specific organization. Extent of performance management. Again, you have the European countries spread all over. Creation of regulatory agencies. But this is. outsourcing, which is the percentage of public expenditure that is spent on third-party providers. This is only central level of government, which explains why Italy, Portugal, Spain, and France are so low. They are not so low because the local government spends a lot. But anyway, the general trend is more or less the same. United Kingdom, Norway, Sweden, Finland, they spend a lot also through outsourcing, while other countries prefer in-house providing. This is the same on vouchers. Okay, vouchers on education. If you see the Netherlands, more than 70% is spent by private. So it's public expenditure on services provided by private institutions. But in Austria or Italy, even Canada is one of the countries in which this expenditure is mainly spent through public institutions. Elderly care, you go from, you see Korea's public institutions are inexistent, everyone is private, although the public expenditure being from taxpayers being public. Till Finland and Sweden and Norway, you know, the Scandinavian countries, when these services, you know, the welfare state, these services are very widely provided, it goes through public institutions. Okay, and here we don't have the time to go through this. There are also some indicators on e-government, and they all tell the same story. So which is the story? The story is that the good governments, if we just pick those countries that have the more effective public administrations, these have very different public administrations, different ways to manage the financial resources, different ways to manage human resources and leadership, different way to approach outsourcing versus in-house providing, different degrees of ICT development and sophistication and so on. So the data confirm us this, that these countries are very different. Why they are different? Oh, this is the outcomes, okay? These are the trends of modernization, these are the outcomes. Government effectiveness. The green is the top percentile, the red is the worst one. And yeah, if we take a look at these indicators, these are from the World Bank. Government effectiveness, voice and accountability, political stability, control of corruption, also the outcomes, so the quality of public administrations is very different. These are 2009 data, the most recent data of the World Bank. So, of course, due to context and due to reforms, public administrations in these countries are very different. And context then depends on some variables like the constitutional system, the historical or economic momentum. Don't forget that all this trend of downsizing and cutting public expenditure happened in very different countries. Spain was coming out from a dictatorship. Greece was just building his welfare system, while the Scandinavian countries had to lighten their welfare system. They had a big public administration. But other countries were just beginning to build their administration. And the same can be said for the new countries, the post-communist countries. They are rebuilding the state, so it's not downsizing, it's more enhancing the capacities and also the dimensions, if you want. Coherence and trust of public institutions and trust in government, the diversity of government arrangements, and so on. And we have another problem here, but I will just mention it. That we are used to work with these country clusters, the Anglo-Saxon tradition, the Napoleonic tradition, the Germanic Reichstag tradition, the Southern European tradition. But are these still valid? Do these still reflect what is happening? Because of course, one very coherent group of countries is the Mediterranean countries that have a career structure, while in Scandinavian countries we don't have this. But the reforms are changing, are separating these countries. In Portugal, the reforms are quite different from what is happening in Greece, Cyprus, Spain, and Italy. The Spanish model is still very similar to the French one. The Italian has changed a lot. Also, if we go and see the civil servants' job security, there are huge differences. And Eastern European countries are a whole different thing again. You say Eastern European countries and you mean the same thing, but you find different, very different countries inside. So we also need better country clusters to understand the impact of context. So let's try to summarize a little bit all this. This is a very interesting area of research and you never get bored. That's what I was saying to her. You never get bored when you study public administration. There are always new things coming up. So the first conclusion is that the non-compliance problem, of course, has legal and political reasons, but has also managerial reasons. All are important and all should be explored in order to find a solution. If we see the data, out of 29 infringement cases, case studies that have been analyzed, 8 were caused by deliberate opposition. So this is a political reason. 9 by issue linkage. So there was another policy problem connected that interfered. 7 by administrative shortcomings. Not enough financial resources or not enough time to accomplish. And 5 by interpretation problems. The instrument was too complicated. And the managerial reasons are thus less explored. What comes out of the data and of the studies of national public services is that we don't have a European public administration, of course, but we don't even have a trend towards Europeanization of public administration. These are not becoming more similar between each other. So, what should we do about this? Should we have the European Union get more interested in regulating public administrations at the national level, or is it better if we keep these differences among countries? This is the first choice to be made. And it doesn't mean that if we leave this inside in the framework of national competencies, this does not mean that the European Union has nothing to do with it, because it influences very strongly the compliance, the implementation, the effectiveness of the integration. So of course this does not mean that the EU gets disinterested from it, but it's another model, it's another approach. And of course, what can your experience with Canada say about this? Canada and the EU are not the same thing, but I'm sure that there are coordination problems between the federal and the provincial level. And I'm sure that there are huge differences between the different provinces that may influence central policy. How do you manage, how do you coordinate policy definition and implementation issues? Intergovernmental relations. But North America has a lot to teach to Europe on intergovernmental relations, I mean, at least because it's a longer story than what's going on in Europe.
But Danita, I think one of the things when I'm listening to you that I keep thinking about is when we think of the European Union, one of the things that we tend to think about is that it has a legitimacy problem. And that's especially true with citizens, that they don't always see the EU decisions as legitimate. And I'm wondering if part of the issue here is that national public administration, public management, even though national governments are part of the decision-making process, I'm wondering if national public administration do not always believe that what the EU does is legitimate. therefore they don't always buy in. We know that one of the ways to get things done is to get buy-in from people at the bottom of the ladder. If you're not getting buy-in, if they don't share the same objective, if they don't share the same goal, if they don't think the decision's been taken is legitimate, they're not necessarily going to work to implement it. So how do you get...
The democratic deficit is surely a problem, and not only of the European Union, also of the national governments. Local governments do not view the decisions taken by the national government as legitimate, often. So it's a chain effect. For instance, the big debate now in Italy is that Lega Nord, which is a party very similar to the Quebec separatists, it's very similar, is now pretending some ministries to be moved to their region instead of the capital city, because they don't consider the decision taken in Rome as legitimate, as democratic. And of course there is a political problem behind the non-implementation of some decisions. But there is also a very managerial problem. So if you are, in some cases, you may be willing to implement the decision, but you may not be able to. So this is where I think public management can give something to the problem.
Can you go back to your milk example, it is being penalized for overproducing milk, and it's being fined. So where the money goes to each institution, that how that money, because a public policy would sort of say that the money that being used from the charges, from the big penalties, be reinvested back into that area in order to improve it.
Yeah, where does the penalty money go?
Yeah, and then how is that money is being used to fix problems or to improve those conditions so that you don't have this?
Well, if we go back to the example that I offered, which was an agricultural policy, that's a big, you can talk for days about this. And the problem is that, I mean, in my view, the policy was not the right policy. To plan everything, the production quantities and so on. And the money, of course, is paid by the central government, but this means that the central government will give less subsidies to the farmers. And most of them don't live thanks to the incomes of selling the milk, but live mostly through the subsidies. So the problem is how to get out of this. They overproduce because they don't have to
subsidies to
match themselves with the demand of milk.
And subsidies sort of encourage them to produce more milk because they get subsidies for that.
That's what they had to, according to the European Union, they had to throw the milk.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We do that in Canada too, as I say. No. We throw a fair amount of milk out.
Yeah, that's a big problem in a crisis moment. But yeah, of course we have these other issues, the democratic deficit and the management deficit at the European Union level, and we need some coordination. But this would have been another lecture wholly on the European Union. Okay. So we may say that non-compliance sometimes depends not on the national administrations, but on the EU. EU is not democratic, is not legitimate, and has a management deficit. Management deficit means that there is not an adequate analysis before taking a decision, or the decision is not of high quality, and so on. So this is one part of the story, but I wanted to focus here on the other part of the story. What happens if the decision is okay, but it's not implemented because there is no capacity on the ground, on the administrative level? And this happens. I mean, this is not a very hypothetical example. This is something that happens. So the point is, do you think there is value behind pluralism and plurality? behind having different approach to managing the public good?
I think if you use pluralism, then you have to rely on the outsourcing. Using pluralism, you have different groups who could fulfill different demands.
It's outsourcing, but it may be civil society organization.
Yeah, whether it's a private or NGO, but the idea is you sort of, you'll do it in-house. You get somebody, you get a group that specializes in the area.
In-house is part of the pluralism.
Okay.
You have all insight. And, I mean, pluralism is about being pragmatic.
But then you're talking about corporatism now. If in-house is part of the group. Like Mexico, for example.
Like?
He's using pluralism in the public policy societal sense. I think what you mean is plurality of different types of public.
Yeah, accepting different approach.
But you don't really have the choice, right? This is actually the reality.
At the moment, the state of art is we have difference. But if you say that this difference has some value because we have richness of ideas, richness of approach, and this having this different approach allows us to make these experiments and see, Greece is handling quite good this kind of policy with this approach. We are having another approach, it's not working. Maybe we can try this one or we can try this other. This means you think that pluralism or plurality has some value, it's a good thing. Or you may say it's a bad thing because having this very huge differences is an obstacle to effective implementation, and we should reduce the differences.
But yeah, how do you reduce? How do you reduce the differences in a society that is not homogeneous? It's very heterogeneous. Yes, they're Europeans. That's a given. But when you look at cultural differences, when you look at language differences, when you look at location where Portugal, Greece, Spain is warmer than say Finland. Their ability to produce goods such as food is a lot stronger than another country where you have winter a large portion of the year. So how do you find harmony? Because there's so many differences, and then what you're saying. It's almost a manipulation in a way.
But this is a very interesting question, but it's another question that comes after. Is it feasible? The first question is it desirable?
Yes. From some countries' perspective, yes and no. Depends on my financial situation, depends on my ability to produce. For a country like Germany, maybe no. For a country like Spain, maybe yes.
Because one thing that really puzzled me was seeing this data of the new countries, of the new European Union countries, that have been obliged to accomplish something regarding public administration, like ethics, hiring system, public procurement. When Italy entered the European Union, there were no requirements of this kind. And for the new countries, there are. And these countries have lower non-compliance problems.
Forced to develop
capacity in some areas. Should we require also Italy to satisfy these standards, or Spain, or Greece, or? And this means greater homogeneity.
Exactly. It presents a sense of fairness and transparency. Mm-hmm. So if you're using the same standard for A, you should use the same standard for Y. Yes, we recognize there are going to be economic differences, depends on where we're operating, but you have to have a common standard to go back to buy-in.
Also about trust, for instance, if I am an English and I work until 65, before I retire, and in Greece I work until 55, I mean, I don't trust the European Union because it's, I see this as not just.
My problem with standardization is competitiveness and innovation.
Yeah.
Like, what does that do if we standardize everything? What is the incentive to create and to develop know?
But that's just standardize the minimal level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Standardize the
maximum. Not a minimal level.
Well, because you can still be creative and innovative, and because it benefits the whole, not just the individual, right? Because you want to encourage that.
But currently, there's countries that put more into the system than others, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, when new countries come in, this changes. For instance, Italy was more a recipient than a giver. When new countries come in, you give more than you take. Of course, the European Union is a political project, most of all. So economic reasons are important, but the main reason is that people should stay together. If you think about Turkey, I mean, from an economic point of view, we should admit Turkey immediately. But there are a lot of obstacles to this. That's also a size issue. Are we sure that bigger is better? I mean, the big countries are China and India, and the richest country are Luxembourg and Switzerland. And is larger better on the economic point?
If you compare NAFTA or just FTA in the NAFTA, then split European countries, that Europe is losing out, but if you create this regionalism of economic house power, then they can compete with NAFTA and vice versa. So in that sense, it should bring your competitiveness up. Whether it does, that's not.
So that's the issue. I mean, there is not a clear answer to this question. And you may have preferences, I have mine, but when I saw this data of new countries, I was a little bit puzzled. Okay, I will just give you some references, and then this is the conference we are, maybe Ian would like to say something, or the conference we are...
If you're interested, while Danita concludes in just a few minutes, this is on Thursday, late afternoon and Friday all day. This is called Making Multi-Level Public Management Work, Cases from the EU and North America. We have a number of other Italians coming, we have people from the United States coming, and we have people from Canada coming, from across the country, all the way from Newfoundland, if they can find their way through Air Canada's maze tomorrow. The great thing about this is that it has examples from the local government, it has example in policy learning adaptation and crisis management. We'll have cases in terms of more relating to constitutional and institutional and constitutional requirements, so cases from across the board. We have 5 panels throughout both days. 15 people coming, all on different issues, but if you're interested in specific cases, this isn't theory building in any way, shape, or form. This is based on concrete case studies and how you try to make this work. So in a way, a follow-up to what you've heard today in terms of how you might make public management work across levels of authority.
Yeah, just to continue the debate. And this is a conference, I'm doing some advertising, but only for a second, a conference.
And if you want to go to Rome next April, which might be better than just across town to Glendon.
It's about contradictions in public management. And we will continue the Europe-North America debate there. So, and these are some references on national public administration, the interaction with the EU, some data, all the data that we saw on OECD countries you find in this report, which you can download from the OECD website, and this book by Walter Kikert from the Netherlands on the traditions, the different traditions in Europe and in the US, the different administrative histories, cultures, and how this mix up with the reforms. And you have my email at the bottom for any question you may have during the match or
so
thank you very much for considering.
So I just wanted to say say on behalf of everyone here, and of course the Student Association, Professor Roberge and Davida, thank you very much for coming out tonight and giving us this talk. And I really appreciate those of you that came out tonight. So thank you very much.